Welcome to Just Around the Corner with Dennis Mansfield, a podcast focused on inspiring and resourcing leaders. Today's episode is a peek behind the curtain of the recording industry. It's a study on a studio's technology and the inspiring leadership that it took for one man to develop a recording studio in the Pacific Northwest. Join me, please. I'm your host, Dennis Mansfield. All business is business. In other words, if I'm creating goods or a service so that it's a financial success rather than a nonprofit hobby, the fair exchange of money for those services and goods has to be a part of the transaction. It really doesn't matter if the widget's a taco truck, a lawn service, or a startup tech business that's housed in somebody's garage. The widget has to have value to the customer. Remember, it doesn't have to be cash in the pocket right this minute. It does have to have value long term. Well, on today's episode of Just Around the Corner with Dennis Mansfield, I start with a riddle. How am I able to invite into a studio recording session a guest who invited me in the first place? The answer? When the guest I'm interviewing owns the studio. Welcome, Michael Sears, to the podcast and to your own studio.
Thank you, Dennis. It's a surprise and a very enjoyable and blessed thing to be able to be interviewed by you. I've watched you interview many other people throughout the course of these podcasts, and usually I just sit over there in awe of how you do it. And so I hope today is up to the high standards that you have set and have been witness to.
Well, part of the good, amazing high standards that we've had on this, on every episode of the podcast has been because we're in your studio. And today, I'd like to encourage the leaders who are out there with businesses, like I say, a taco truck, it could go in, any other kinds of business, about what it takes to do what you've done. Now, television and movies are replete, you know it and I know it, with images of recording studios. Everybody thinks they know what a recording studio is. In the minds of so many listeners, well, especially to musical recording sessions, they might either, well, think of a recording studio as something tiny and glass enclosed, like the portrayal of Sun Records, that studio, and Johnny Cash's Walk the Line. Or they might think of Tom Hanks' recording of the Wonders, or as they say in the film, the Oneaters. In the semi-spacious studio of that film. That thing you do. It's all about recording and it's all about studio. Well, still, come on. We might even have to catch a glimpse of the studio royalty. That's right. Abbey Road, with the release of Peter Jackson's film, The Beatles, Get Back. That's going to be on Disney Plus. Abbey Road, people who've never been to England feel they've been inside the studio. What do you think before you opened your studio, what were your thoughts on what you wanted to have in your studio?
You know, that's a good question. I'd probably been recording for about 10 years prior to that. And, I kind of over that time developed a sort of a, you know, list in my head, and I read a lot of articles, but as I got closer and closer to it, I read even more so. And I realized that, you know, these spaces require a lot of thought and a lot of design and a decent amount of money if you're going to, you know, build it out probably the way you ought to. You know, you can record anywhere with a microphone and an audio interface and a computer, but what you don't get is the vibe and the acoustics and the space and the ability to capture it in a way that sounds good, because not every room sounds good. I mean, there's a lot of spaces that have a lot, have too much, you know, echo, reverb, or whatever, and that, and all of that interferes with the recording process. So anyway, I just approached it with, you know, I hired a guy to do the work, and actually, you know who he is. And I just said, hey, here's what I know about recording studios. I don't know how to turn it into an actual, you know, space with somebody constructing it, but here's what I know. And if you're willing to at least, you know, work with that and come up with, you know, a space that is pretty close, you know, you got the job. And he was like, yeah.
When he did that, did you have draft one, draft two? Did you have some things that you had to move around, or did he nail it?
You know, the trickiest part was getting the wall construction right. You can't see it here because it's podcast, but the ceilings here are angled. And one of the things you don't want to have is a flat rectangle room. The sound waves just bounce all over the place, and it really doesn't make for a pleasing, you know, recording environment. So I left those the way they are. I said, just leave those. But the rest of the walls are very, carefully constructed using double construction and soundproofing techniques. And that was the part that was really pretty tricky.
So on the one side, you had to deal with all the technological things.
Yeah.
All of the unique angles and all of what would bounce, what would not bounce before you ever made a dime.
True. Yeah.
And when you were sinking that money into it, mm-hmm. What did your bride say? What'd your wife say?
Well, fortunately at the time I did have work, and by day I am a software engineer, mm-hmm. and
by night you're a superhero.
by night I'm Peter Jackson. and so, you know, as long as it was within reason, I guess reason as defined by here's what I want to spend. Okay. Well, when she picked herself up off the floor, it was more money probably than she was expecting, but
isn't that the way it is yeah. with anybody who wants to build a space within which they can then have their business flow?
Well, you've got to sell. Yeah. I mean, I think you got to spend money to make money. I mean, you got to invest a certain amount to have a quality place that people are going to want to come, and they're going to notice a difference. If they don't notice a difference, if they don't want to be here, they're probably not going to come back. They're probably not going to tell their friends.
Well, if you think about it, here you came through and started your business side of it. And of course, we're talking to people that don't have studios, but are interested in how a studio business happens. How do you determine the business side of it? Do you direct, or did you at the time when you started, develop contracts so that when people came in and you had a multi-day use of your studio, that they would sign a contract? Or did you have a gentleman's agreement? How did you work the business side of it?
Well, I had realized that, you know, you can, any creative endeavor has that creative side to it, which kind of tends to be the side that goes on and on. Like, you're almost never satisfied with what you're doing. Either the artist is not satisfied. Hey, can you make this change to the mix? Hey, can we re-record this? Or me, I'm mixing it. I'm not happy with the mix. You know, let me remix this part of it. It can go on and on because it's art and it's subjective. So I sort of decided early on that I would charge an hourly rate for my services. Well, let me back up. I said I would charge this much for a song, for tracking and mixing a song.
Yeah.
It was a set amount, but then I added in, that gives you 10 hours of tracking and mixing, however you choose to use that. And what that does is that gives the client, if they want to come in and they're really well rehearsed and they can come in and nail it pretty quickly, that leaves a lot of time for the mixing. But if they're not very well prepared and they need, you know, input from me, more like production assistance, or if I need to come up with some tracks, me coming up with the tracks, all of that sort of eats into that 10 hours. And then you're only left with maybe a couple hours to mix. So that's fine. I said, I'll do more if you want, but here's the set hourly rate. You're going to have to pay above and beyond 10 hours. So I leave it up to the client that way. They have some control over it. And that sort of incentivize, can't say the word. Gives them the incentive to at least come in and try to be as prepared as they can, because I think that's the better way to do it. But, you know, if not, that's fine too. You know, I'll work with any client who's willing to, you know, do the work.
Michael, this podcast is set up to inspire and resource business leaders. These are leaders of departments, leaders of maybe they own their own business. In all of them, it comes back to the idea of marketing. So tell me about the marketing side of life for you. How do you build your business? And have you found, you know, word of mouth really to be still successful and having more people come to knock, knock, knocking on Michael's door?
Here's the part of the business, of any business, that I don't excel at. So I play in bands. In addition to doing the studio, I'm also a musician and I play in bands. And I've done the marketing for the bands and I've done the marketing for the studio, but I don't do nearly enough. I'm not as, and I think part of it is because I have a day job. And so, you know, for me, it's an after hours type of thing. And I'm a little more relaxed about the whole side of marketing. Having said that, I wish at times that I would do a little more of it and I could increase my clients and some of the work that I'm doing here. I do think this is a good studio. Everybody who comes into the studio just goes, wow, this is amazing. You know, and there's been some word of mouth. I actually have gotten referrals from my son who works at a high school here in town. And he'll call me up sometimes and say, so I've got this student and he or she, you know, wants to record and you know, I'd love to send him your way. And so I've done a number of those types of recordings.
Oh, that must be really rewarding.
It's great. You know, these students, like, I wish I was as together, you know, when I was in high school as these kids are. You know, I think they've grown up in this whole digital revolution. It really is a revolution. You know, they've grown up in social media. You know, they know how to record stuff. They're used to sort of putting themselves out there, and they just kind of come in and they write these amazing songs and they record them, and I crank them out, and they go great, you know, and and so they seem pretty happy with it. But you know, the challenge I found with maybe more of the full-time musicians in town, or you know, maybe the more serious ones, is there is competition. There are other studios now. Mm-hmm.
Even though you cover the Pacific Northwest, every local area has a series of competitors, and
sure,
competition is good.
Yeah,
whether it's a region, a state, even a city.
Yeah. It's gotten easier to build a recording studio. And I haven't seen some of them, so I don't know if they've gone to the lengths that I have. You know, if they've invested as much money. In addition to the room, you've got your equipment too. You've got your mics and your preamps and your audio interfaces and all these things that contribute to the overall sound. So, I just try to do the best that I can. I really enjoy it. I try to make the name of the studio is Sanctuary Studio, and I really wanted it to be a place where you could come, feel welcome, feel relaxed, you know, catch a vibe, you know, feed your muse, you know, that sort of thing. So I think I succeeded, and I'm just, word gets out and people find out, and, you know, we'll hopefully get some more.
It's got a Muscle Shoals sort of feel about it when you walk in here, because it is, there's a spirit about the place that's just remarkable. Now, so let me ask this, even with your whole other careers, you've got a couple different bands. Give us some background on your history as a musician, because just to say, you know, I'm in the band, man. You've really got decades of musical experience. Yeah. Let the listeners know.
Oh, sure. Well, I started really young. I think I was about 10 years old when I got my first guitar, and I got out of the band in school immediately. I was playing clarinet at the time.
Wait a minute. Wait. You gave up the clarinet for guitar.
I know. Who can believe it?
I'm stunned. I'm stunned.
Well, the Beatles had just played, and as every musician...
You didn't want to be Pete Fontaine or
I didn't know about Pete then. I just knew about the Fab Four.
Yes.
And there was a lot of girls screaming. I knew that.
That is a reason to throw away the clarinet.
No, I never saw him scream for the clarinet, so I quickly realized the guitar was where it was at, baby.
10 years old, that's amazing.
I don't know, did sports a bit, but I just kept coming back to music, and I started getting bands in high school, played in these bands, played in rock bands. When I graduated, I moved here, and I went to Boise State. I studied music. I got serious, and I got my degree in music, and then really I thought that I was going to become a professional performer. But I'd also found faith, and it wasn't just as any performer. I was looking to do it as a Christian performer, to have a ministry, and to do that full time. It didn't quite work out. So I came, we came back, my wife and I came back.
Let's stop for a second.
Yeah.
It didn't quite work out.
Right.
I don't know how many songs in the 60s,
Yeah.
They talk about don't tell anybody. I'm coming home sort of thing.
Right. Yeah.
That wasn't the case with you. You went down there and you gave it everything you had.
Sure.
You weren't waiting tables. You were making music.
Yeah.
And when it didn't work out, what happened with your faith, being T-boned with what you wanted your career to be?
Yeah. It was a big decision. Part of it was, I knew my wife was not real happy. She was like, haven't you, given it enough? Haven't we given it enough time type thing? And I could tell she was growing restless. And I was honestly a little concerned about, our relationship. And so for me, it was kind of like, it was one of those big moments in when you have faith, and you realize you got to make a decision that could be life altering and you're giving up something that's near and dear to you. But I just really felt like that's what God wanted me to do and wanted us to do. And so, I'm looking back on it now, with a lot of hindsight and a lot of perspective. And, I realized it was the right decision. It was a good decision. And I would say that I have gotten to do so many things that I still feel very fulfilled. I feel like I've gotten to do just about everything that was in my heart to do. I also spent years in church leading worship, and that's where you and I, come together, and that's where we meet.
I remember going up and saying, I'd like to sing in the worship band. And you said, well, go ahead, audition for me. And I went to Led Zeppelin's Immigrant Song. And, it was beautiful. It was a beautiful moment.
It was a moment.
And I was pounding my chest, if I remember correctly, but I don't think I had a shirt on. And so it gave it sort of that slapping. Skin feel.
It was an inspiring performance, but I remember I had to say, Dennis, I'm not sure this is where your calling is.
You know what? I didn't take it poorly. The counseling lasted for about a year and a half, but I was okay with it when I finally realized, whatever. Actually, I loved meeting you, seeing you on the worship team, having the joy all those years ago, decades ago, and going, yes, you're lifting my spirit up. You and the other guys, Stan Sinclair and so many other, Cameron Ventura,
yeah,
wonderful musicians.
Yeah, it was a big part of my life for many, many years. And
well, here's the deal. Now, you move forward.
Yeah.
You still are playing. You put bands together. You put your studio together. You're here in the Pacific Northwest, not down in Southern California. And I'd just like you to put your business hat on for a second, not your creative, producer, director hat. When you're recording another artist or a band for that matter, how are you able to remain the technical guy and not the musical guy, the musical director, if you will? If that talent needs, tightening up, maybe some criticism, you're paid only to turn the dials. How do you handle that?
That's a great question. I think every audio engineer sort of, goes through which hat to wear at what time. And so the way I approach it is, I tell the client up front, and you can kind of tell right away whether they sort of know what they want, whether they don't know what they want. A lot of times they'll say, you know, I really want your input, you know, so feel free. So, you know, I do, but I'm still careful, you know, to do it in an encouraging way, in a as minimal as I can, you know, just to give them as much freedom as possible. But, you know, there's times when I will throw out a few suggestions and say, you know, maybe we want to track that again. You know, I think you can do a little bit better. And maybe if you played it this way, it might be a little bit better. So I think I've found a good, you know, line there. Some people pretty much like, yeah, you're the producer from the get-go. And, you know, whatever you say is fine. You know, I don't know what I'm doing here. And so like, okay, well, you know, I'll hold your hand and we'll walk through this together and, you know, we'll make something, you know, great. Just have more of my impact, more of my imprint on it. But, you know, both of them can be great. You know, if, again, it depends on the artist, depends on their expertise and their comfort and, you know, whether you know, they kind of have the vision, and if they don't have the vision, are they willing to receive input? And if they're willing to do that, I'm more free to give them that. I have no problem expressing my ideas. That's not the problem. It's just I really have learned to try to hold back as much as I can.
And moving from music into podcast recording.
Yes.
Look, I'm a podcaster. Can you record me? Wait. That didn't come out right. That almost sounds like a line from Meet the Parents. You know, the one where they're sitting around the table and they're talking about milking farm animals and the concept of cats come up. Every time I see that, I laugh. Okay, let's start over again. You also do other spoken recordings, podcasting, audible books. And, you know, when you do that, what did you have to adjust in your studio for the sake of recording hours of someone reading, you know, authors reading, a voice talent reading, versus 3.5 minutes of a song that just cranks?
Yeah, it's like running a 1500 meter versus a 200 meter race. I mean, you know, songs are a lot of intense recording and playing in a short amount of time. Yeah, you got 3.5 minutes to get all these people doing this. Spoken is more relaxing, you know. But if you like, for example, if you're doing an audio book, those can go stretch on for hours, you know. And so the only concern I have really is for the person who's doing the reading, and they have to pace themselves, and their voice has to hold up over time, and It's a difficult thing, is it not? And you know, unless your voice is in really good shape and you've really done your vocal calisthenics, and by the way, the vocal cords are a muscle just like any other muscle, and they have to be exercised and maintained and all those kinds of things. So you really have to be sort of tip top shape with your vocal if you're going to read that much, and it's pretty demanding, you know. Not so much for me, you know, because I'm you know, just making sure that everything sounds good, levels are good, but you know, it's mostly on the person doing the reading. But yeah, it is a very different sort of, you know, way of approaching it and recording. But a lot of my business right now is doing podcasting, so I think it's working okay.
So with a studio like this, Michael, that you have, where you're doing both podcast, audible books, you're doing music, in fact, 15 years ago, you had the opportunity to record a young man. He was 17, 18 years old, and his name is Trevor Powers. He was one of the few that you hear about that go on and make it. 15 years later, in his early 30s, he has a following. And it started in this studio. That's amazing. So let me ask this. Do you mind sharing some other stories, maybe a couple examples, you know, for the podcast listeners? Maybe starting with a single musicians recording and take it from there.
Yeah, love to. I had the opportunity to work with a young lady. Her name was Hannah Buckles, and she went to the local high school here. She graduated, and she had called me probably a year before expressing interest, and then, you know, she didn't call back, and so I wasn't sure. But then out of the blue, she's like, no, I really still want to come record. I'm like, okay, great. So she brings me this song, and then, like, kind of like right midstream, she says, oh, I think I don't know if I want to do that song. I'm going to write another one.
So you mean in the studio?
Well, she went back home and with her mom, I guess, who got co-writing on the lyrics. They brought this other song, like, the next time they came, and the song is called Plunge. And she didn't have a band. She didn't have any real idea of what the arrangement should be, what the style should be. She just had kind of played her ukulele and sang, and she had a good voice, and the lyrics were, you know, interesting and, you know, and engaging, and she had a real sense of all that stuff, but she just didn't know about the musical arrangement part. So she's like, could you help me with that? I'm like, sure. So I came up on my, I do a lot of production work on my computer. I also play guitar, I play bass, I can do some keys and that sort of thing. I don't do drums. I usually bring somebody in if I need to, but I can also do program drums on the computer, which I did for this song. So I came up with this arrangement, and you know, we might get to hear a little snippet of that.
Why don't we do that right now?
Okay.
Let's take the plunge. Let's take the plunge.
Wow, that sounded nice.
That's amazing. It came out really well. It's probably one of the best things I've produced here in the studio. For that, I was wearing my producer hat.
Yeah.
And she seemed really happy with it. And I think it's number one now. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, it's number one in her heart.
And yes, exactly. Yeah. She wrote me the nicest note afterwards that anyone has ever written me about how much she appreciated, you know, working with me. And I wish she would do some more, but she's kind of like trying to be, I think, mature young person.
Well, we all grow up.
Yeah.
And at the same time, we hope that we don't grow past our dreams. I think that's you know, kudos to her. All right, now, so help me out, because 1969, the year of Woodstock. Okay, Corduroy Thursday was my band. That's right, Corduroy Thursday, and we were pretty good. I was lead guitar. And we had our bass player had a McCartney bass. And I'm not talking about a brand of bass, but the bass that Paul McCartney played. It was so tremendous.
Stole it right away from when he wasn't
looking. Well, borrowed. But drummer, keyboard, we changed our name, Third Stone from the Sun, because we felt that was more dynamic. Now, we didn't ever record, darn it. But, you know, here we go. You've done bands. You've done duos or duets, I guess. I don't know what the proper nomenclature is.
Yeah.
Tell us about this one.
Well, these are a couple of guys who came, a guitarist, and the other guy sang and played harmonica, wrote the lyrics, and they just kind of been at it for a while, but they'd never recorded. So they came here. They really liked the studio. They wanted to record a bunch of songs, and so we did a song. Now they wanted to do a band, more of a band, you know, type of sound. So I, you know, as a studio owner, you want to have access to other studio musicians that you can bring in to record in these situations. So I brought in the guys that I was in. The band that I was in with them at the time, because they're actually great musicians. I mean, they're super good musicians. Came in, laid down the tracks with them, brought in a guy who played acoustic bass, upright bass.
Oh my heavens!
Because it really fit the music, as you'll hear in a minute.
That's fantastic.
It turned out pretty well. You know, I thought it's kind of a Americana. You know, it's a little more stripped back type of sound, but it's very engaging.
And do you remember the name of this one?
If you're lucky.
If you're lucky. Let's listen to that.
Okay.
though the whole world is screaming. Don't have to sleep to start dreaming. If you're lucky in life, if you're lucky in life, walking along between raindrops. If you're lucky in life, there'll be someone there walking with you. If you're lucky in life, you'll find more ways to live.
That's really well done. I think we're lucky to have listened to it. That's amazing. And they did it in the confines of this studio.
Yep.
Why don't you take pictures of him?
I don't have that same gift that you do, Dennis. I forget to take pictures half the time. That's why I'm not good at marketing.
No. That's the reality is you're focused on what you're doing. See? I'm a podcaster, but you do other podcasts. Tell us about this studio for the use of another podcaster.
Well, because my fame was growing because of the Just Around the Corner podcast, my daughter, who I guess had on her bucket list for many years that she wanted to do a podcast, and so she and a friend of hers who both wanted to try this, dad, can you record us as well? So I'm like, okay, yeah, let's give it a shot. Let's see how it goes. So they came in, we did the first podcast, and I knew almost instantaneously my daughter has the gift, just like you do, Dennis. She has that gift of being in front of a microphone, doing a podcast, and there is no awkward downtime. She sounds great. She sounds professional. In fact, when they'd done a couple of them, they sent them to a friend of theirs who works for a local radio station, and this woman was so impressed. She was like, "You could come be on the radio and do us. you could fill a slot." So Laura was pretty excited. But yeah, the podcast is Laura. It's Laura and Derek, and the podcast is called Like Literally Anything. Quote, Like Literally Anything.
Like Literally Anything.
Is
great.
The name of the podcast.
I love it.
And they kind of do it like a morning radio show, a couple of DJs just kind of rapping and riffing on whatever the morning, headlines and subjects are, and just kind of whatever, they just talk about a wide variety of things.
What a creative idea. I'd like to listen to it. Can we do that right now?
Yeah.
It's your studio, but I mean.
Here's a segment.
I invited you in, right?
I believe so,
Wait a minute. You invited me in. But you invited Laura in. Laura and Derek. Let's listen to it.
Well, maybe you can write to their headquarters and request that you get.
I just want them to
diet.
Do it. Well, that's the stupid thing about it, right? Isn't that what all the stupid, anytime there's some report on beverages on the news? They say like diet outsells regular stuff, 10
to 1. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Nobody makes any flavors for diet. It's
interesting.
I mean, if you go to that Maverick on the corner right down the street,
yeah,
you have like diet Pepsi, diet Coke.
And that's it.
Sprite Zero, and that's about it.
Huh. I know they have Dr. Pepper like Zero now, essentially.
Yeah.
Like there's the equivalent of that. I don't know. I think because people are afraid.
Wow. Again. Man, that is very clear, very crisp, very professional. Woo! Now, can I move over to an awkward area?
Ah, well, if you must.
All right, so here's the deal. I recorded my most recent book as an audiobook here. Show What You Did with the recording of the opening paragraphs of my Audible version of To Trust in What We Cannot See, because it was a jolting beginning. And I remember when you first read the prologue, you were like, wait, what? Should we just let him listen?
Yeah, it's probably best.
All right, I'll go off live and we'll go to Trust in What We Cannot See. Welcome to Vienna, I said as I handed him my trophy dessert. I believe this is yours. He looked surprised. No, actually, the man in front of me ordered that. I wish it were mine, he said with a slight smile. Well, I'm the man that was in front of you, and this pastry has your signature on it, I guess. I paused. I'm here regularly anyway, so have it, I said as I extended the plate to him. I'll have mine tomorrow. He laughed, the sort of light chuckle that had more to it than my comment required, and then replied, that's very kind of you. Man, oh man, that guy's good. No.
He is.
The recording is really so vivid. You know, the listener, it seems like the listener, I'm somewhat partial, right? But many people who have listened to the audiobook have told me that they thought they were actually there. They could hear nothing but the story. There was no crackling. There's no anything that distracted them.
Yeah.
And, you know, as I just listened to that, I thought, man, I'm right there. And then I realized, wait a minute, I wrote that. Wait a minute, I did that. I was right there.
Out of body experience.
Oh, come on, Michael. How fun is this for you to do?
It's great. You know, I got the bug to do this 15 years ago. I never knew it would become something, you know, on par with, you know, playing my, you know, in a band and being a musician. But I really do love the studio. It's just got its own charm. I think studios are magical places. I really do. And I'm in love. You know, if I ever go to, you know, England, I know on the top of my list is to go visit Abbey Road Studio. I would just be like falling all over myself. I would be.
As you know,
the best.
Just down the street from that was where they did the photo shoot of walking across Abbey Road.
Yeah.
And so 3 or 4 years ago, when we went to Liverpool, but we went down to London to actually go there. And our taxi driver was, oh, come on, you know, let's go. And so we went. And then we were standing right outside of where Abbey Road. It was a magical moment. So I am with you. I know in studio you have a picture of course, the Beatles walking across. And I just love it.
Yeah, it's like a lot of these studios from the outside, you never know what awaits you. As soon as you walk into the door, though, there's like these, you know, totally these large spaces, and you know, they just have this charm to them because you know amazing things have happened there, and you get the right combination of room and performance and song and equipment and. You know, you record all that at the right time and hits are made. And, you know, I'm not necessarily, you know, doing it just so I can make hits, but I do really love how you start with, you know, kind of like raw tracks, you know, just the just recorded tracks and you start mixing it and applying all that knowledge and all of those effects processing and whatnot. And what comes out is something so far beyond, you know, what you started with. I suppose it's a bit like making, you know, soup or cooking, you know, like you get the right ingredients, just so.
Well, we've given our listeners a kind of a peek behind the curtain in the theater of the mind, their minds, really, for recording on many, many levels today. Your studio is top flight. Your engineering and editing are incredibly professional. Your business model is sound. Tell us, where do you hope to go with your studio over the next 2 to 4 years?
Yeah, I have to imagine that there's still you know, podcasts and songs and clients out there waiting, and I'm ready. You know, I'm always investing in, you know, better and better equipment and better you know, knowledge and techniques and appreciation. I welcome. The opportunities to, you know, not everybody's going to have their own studio. And so it's just finding the people that are willing to, you know, spend a little bit more than they would otherwise, but they're totally freed up to just come in and record and make what's in their heart to make. You know, that's my joy, is helping their vision come to life.
You know, as we come in for landing on the episode today, how can West Coast listeners respond and get connected with you if they'd like to record here in your studio?
Probably my email address would be the best. It's sealsongs@hotmail.com. That's SEALSONGS, sealsongs@hotmail.com. And just drop me an email. Let me know your interest, and we'll work some out.
Wow, this is an amazing place. And I just want to thank you, Michael. Thank you for the opportunity of doing our episode on your studio and encouraging others who have small businesses to grow and keep going, to never give up, you know, for allowing us to be in with you today. It's been an absolute joy.
Yeah, that's what it's about. And I really appreciate the opportunity to do this with you, Dennis. It's such a pleasure for me. I see you on both sides. You are a true communicator, and it's been great.
I'm Dennis Mansfield, your host for Just Around the Corner. Thanks to Colin Mansfield and Michael Seals for production work on today's episode. And also to Kevin Miller in the Morning for his ongoing inspiration. Thank you for joining us on this episode. Just Around the Corner with Dennis Mansfield. Take time to enjoy what's up ahead for yourself. Because, as John Hay, one of the world's most famous men of the late 19th and earliest 20th centuries, once wrote to a friend, all the best gifts are just around the corner.